So yesterday we started on Daf Tes Amud Beis. Let's see if we can pick up where we left off. So if you recall, we had this whole discussion here about a Kohen who he looks into a bar, and in that sense he's Mahil Al HaNefel. We're not sure if there's a Nefel there, and we're certainly not sure if there's a possibility that the Chulda may have carried away the Nefel. And Bo Maisel Ifnei Chacham V'Tirua, and because of the possibility that there's a Chulda there, they Metire this Kohen, and they assume that the Chulda would have dragged the Nefel into a corner, and as a result there was no mile on Nefel. And the Gemara says, wait a second, if they're only being mitire him because they knew of the Chulda, then it would seem that this establishes a principle which contradicts everything we've been saying on Tes Amud Aleph, that Safek is Motzi Midei Vadai. In other words, we know that there was a Nefel there in the bar. We're not sure if the Chulda did or did not remove the Nefel. And based on that Safek, we're going to be Mitire him. So Gemara says, no. The reason why they Mitire is because they weren't even sure if there was a Nefel in the bar. And we have to reinterpret the Braisa with a little bit more of a liberal interpretation of the words of the Braisa, that when the Braisa says that the Kohen was trying to see whether it's a Zohar and a Keva, first he was trying to determine whether or not there was a Nefel there. And then he would determine what the gender of the Nefel was and what the Yimei HaTara was. So that's what we say, Hachi Kamar, which is about 10 lines down from the top here, Leidha im Ruachi Pila, im Nefeli Pila, the Imtim Salomer Nefeli Pila, Leidha im Zacharum, the Kevahu. So the first answer to the Gemara is that Ein Safek Motzim Deivade, but here it's a case of Safek who Safek. We don't know whether there's a Nefel there, and even if there is a Nefel there, we don't know whether he was metiming himself to the Nefel. Eboy same. And now the Gemara has a second answer. Hasam vadehu vadehu. Let's assume that it was absolutely clear that there was a Nefel there. So we start with a vadeh tumo. However, there's also another vadeh. Why? Kevan de chuldo bardos mitzuyim shav vadeh garu bahi shaita. In other words, when you're dealing with a moment in time, and you're dealing not with the total consumption of the Dover Hamatame, the Dover Asur, but rather moving it and dragging it to another place, then we can call that a Vadai. We definitely could assume, without a shadow of a doubt, that the Chulda would have dragged the Nefel into its little cubbyhole, you know, where it wants to eat the Nefel at the passage of time. So at the very critical moment when the Kohen stretched his head over to look inside the bar, at that moment the Chulda had already moved the Nefel into a bar, into the Chulia, the Char of the bar, and therefore there was no Tumah. However, in the case of a Chulda with regard to Chametz, we cannot be sure that the Chametz was completely consumed by the Chulda. Now, it's, even though I would certainly assume that the Chulda would have dragged the Chametz into the side, right, into some sort of a cubbyhole, as we called it, into its protection place, but nevertheless it's still within the house. Until the Chulda eats up the Chametz, he's got Chametz in his house. So the Gemara says, therefore, we're not dealing, in the case of Chametz, with a Vadei Uvadei, but rather with a Vadei and a Sofek. Because Nehi Dishiure Mishaira, the Chulda, might not have completely consumed, in the case of the Nefel, in the case of the Chametz, but Migrar Mios Vadei Gorum Bahi Shaita. We have no doubt that at the moment that the Kohen looked into the bar, at that moment, by that time already, the Chulda had dragged the Chametz into the side of the main floor of the bar, into one of the side elements here. But in the case of Chametz, you know, we don't know exactly what happened to the chametz. Was it consumed? Was it not consumed? So whereas in Tumah we don't have to know whether it was consumed or not. All we have to assume is that the Kohen was not ma'il on the Nefel, and that's enough to be established, because Chuldu Badlis Vadai Garu Bahishaita, it's a Vadai that could be Motsumide Vadai. But in the case of the Chametz, where we saw the Chuldu take the Chametz into the house, we don't have any Vadai to assume that for sure, beyond the shadow of a doubt, the Chuldu had eaten up all the Chametz. Because we have this principle called Shiure Mishaire. Shiure Mishaire means that the Chuldu would have left some over. So again, in the case of Tumah, that's not relevant to us, but in the case of Chametz, that is certainly relevant. Now, yesterday we had a long discussion about this Tosus Divya Masuva Lochai Shinan Lechulda. I just want to very quickly review what we said, and that is that there's a difference between what's called Bayis LeBayis and Mokum LeMokum, which means that if you're afraid of chametz coming in from another house where they didn't do bedikah into your house where you did bedikah, then it's ein l'davar sof. There's no way, there's no possibility of ever achieving vados and ever being certain that there's no chulda coming in with chametz, because there's chametz all over the world. But with regard to the house itself, that means from one room to the other, that's called in the Lashon HaMishnah, Mokom LeMokom, there we could solve the problem. What we would need is to simultaneously be bodek the entire house in such a way that every room has its protection. You know, there's somebody who's a security guard who's making sure that no chulda comes in, until finally we can get to the point where the bayis itself as one total entity has a cheskas baduk, and there's no chulda. That's not going to help us again, mibayis labayis, from chametz coming in from the outside. But at least from within, we could actually achieve this goal of being sure that there's no movement of a chulda of chametz in the mouth of a chulda from one room to the other. That we can guarantee. And that's what this whole sugya is all about. That maybe if we're worried about a chulda, we should worry from one makom, from one cheder to another cheder, and we should not apply the principle of aim l'dover sof, because we could in fact solve this problem and make sure that the entire house is checked, each room at the same time, and therefore we're not worried about a chulda. And we're all going to apply the principle of aim l'dover sof as far as mi bayis l'bayis, as far as chametz coming in from the outside. Now, the last thing that we discussed yesterday is the question of whether chulda is a neviya. Do you remember that? Okay. Now, why are we wondering whether the chulda is a neviya? Because of Abaye. Abaye wants to say the following, that there seems to be a contradiction between our Mishnah here, we'll call it the Reisha on Daf Tesam and Beis, and the Seifa on Daf Yud Amud Aleph. The Gemara postulates the following contradiction. Are we worried about a chulda, or are we not worried about a chulda? Our Mishnah says we're not worried about a chulda. The Mishnah later on says that after you complete your bedikah, now you have chametz that's designated to be eaten, you know, for breakfast the next morning on Erev Pesach, you have to be very careful, says the Mishnah, and not allow any chulda to get access to your chametz. And that's called lahatzniyah. You have to hide away your chametz. Any chametz that you are reserving for achila has to be hidden away in a safe place, so the chulda won't get to you. The underlying premise of the Mishnah, therefore, is that we have to be worried about a chulda, that there is a possibility that a chulda might take your chametz. Our Mishnah, on the other hand, which we'll call the Reisha, because it's all part of one Mishnah, but our Mishnah says we're not worried about a chulda, only in the case where we saw the chulda coming in. But here's a case where we didn't see the chulda coming in.
But we know. We know if there's the chametz, less chametz than what I put there the night before. If I put in
excellent.
A box of Cheerios.
Okay, we're going to get to that answer. But the Gemara doesn't know that answer yet. Okay. So our mind gives the following answer. And he says there's a difference between bedikah on the 13th and bedikah on the 14th. And it's based on the psychological premise of Hilchos Chuldos, that a chulda is aware of the fact that there's a dearth of chametz there's no chametz around, and if she has a piece of chametz, she's going to make sure to put it away for a rainy day, because all of a sudden, you know, it's
chametz free zone.
Yeah, it's a chametz free zone, right? It's a what was the word I was going to look for? It's a depression period. You know, a depression. We went to 1929 depression. There's no chametz to be had. So here's the difference, says Abai, between the 13th and the 14th. On the 14th, the chulda gets very anxious because there's no chametz around. You know, the Balbais did his bedika, and the chulda finally got a hold of a piece of chametz, and the chulda is holding on to that chametz. That's called shiurei meshaira, that we mentioned earlier. It's going to put away the chametz. On the 13th, says Abai, then ain choshishin. Why? Because the chulda knows that there's plenty of chametz to be had. The chulda is therefore not anxious about putting away the chametz for a rainy day, and it completely consumes that piece of chametz. So it comes out the following: we have a reisha and a sefer. The reisha, which is our Mishnah Daf Tesam and Aleph, is talking about a case where the bedika was done on the 13th of Nisan. On the 13th of Nisan, there's no shiuri meshayri. We're not worried about the chulda, because if the chulda gets a hold of a piece of chametz, you can bet it's going to completely eat the chametz. So basically, chulda likes to eat chametz. The only thing is that the chulda has to be very smart about the future, and the chulda sometimes will overcome its natural tendency to eat the chametz, because the chulda realizes you got to put some away for a rainy day. So that's going to happen on the 14th of Nisan, but on the 13th of Nisan, that's our Mishnah, ein choshishin. We're not afraid of a chulda, because the chulda sees on the 13th a massive amount of chametz, and therefore the chulda will do what it normally does. Its natural propensity is and desire is to eat up the chametz, and that's exactly what we can assume. So we don't have to worry about a chulda. The Mishnah says on Daf Yud that we have to lock up the extra chametz because of the chulda. That's because that Mishnah is talking about a case where he did the bedikah on the 14th. When he does the bedikah on the 14th, now the chulda gets very anxious because there's no chametz around, and therefore we have to worry about the Shema Gira Chulda and Shiri Mishaira and this chametz. So Rava says the following. Wait a second. There's another element to the equation here. We're constantly baking new chametz, and the chametz comes out of the oven, and the chulda smells the chametz. So the chulda. So let's go back to the case of the 14th, right? And that's the case which is the sefer of the Mishnah that's on Daf Yud. According to Abaye, since the bedikah was done on the 14th, the chulda is going to be very nervous about the dearth of chametz, and therefore it's going to be shirei mishayri. So Rava says, what, the chulda neviyahi? The chulda knows that on a daily basis there's always baking of new bread. So why would the chulda be nervous on the 14th? After all, that very night or the very morning afterwards, there's going to be new bread coming out of the oven that's going to be baked. Does the chulda have the neviyahs? Does it have the prophecy that it knows that tomorrow morning they're not going to be baking a new round of chametz? Therefore, therefore Rava rejects Abai. So let's read it inside. Umi Amrina, do we say ein choshen shema gira chulda vaktani sefer? What about the sefer of our Mishnah? It says in the sefer, Masha Meshayer, that which he leaves over after his bedika, yani chenu bitzina, he should put it in a very safe place. And this is on Daf Yudom and Beis. And why is he putting it in a safe place? So the Mishnah itself answers that question. Shelo yeitzarf bedika achrav, because if he doesn't lock up this chametz, then the chulda is going to get access to the chametz, and it's going to bring the chametz into the house, and it's not going to eat it all up. Oh, Rabbi Lo Kasha, the Mishnah that you're quoting on Daf Yudam and Beis is Be Arbasar. That's a regular classic Bedikah on the 14th. And if it's on the 14th, then there's not too much chametz around, and the chulda therefore gets very nervous and leaves the chametz around, protecting it for the rainy day. But our Mishnah, the Reisha here on Daf Tes, is Bishlosh Asar. And Bishlosh Asar Shchiach Rifta Bekuli Bati. There's plenty of bread to be had all over the place on the 13th. And Lo Mitzna, therefore she's not going to hide away the Chametz. She'll eat the Chametz. But Barbasar, in the case of the Seifa, where it's on the 14th, there we have to be very careful. Why? Because Lo Shchicha Rifta Bekula Bati, there's no volume of Chametz around, and therefore what's the Chul going to do with that one piece of Chametz that she has? Is Mitzna, she'll put it away because she thinks it's a rainy day. Omar Rabba Vichri Chulda Neviahi, Diyada Diyah Idnar Beasar, Velo Afi, and they're not going to bake anymore. Chalas Adliurta, and what they normally do is they bake chalas for the next day, they bake bread for the next day. And therefore, Mishairei Umitmara, she's going to be very nervous about it, and therefore she's going to put away the chametz rather than eat the chametz because she knows that they're not baking chametz. What is she, a Neviah? We had a Neviah by the name of Chulda, but not a weasel. El Amar Rava, Masha Mishayer Yanichena Bitsina, Shematitol Chulda Bifanenu, V'heitzarech Bidika Acharav. What's going to happen is, says Rava, if we're not careful about the chametz and locking it up, but rather we're going to sort of leave it around exposed, then the chulda is going to get a hold of it, and we're going to see that in front of us via heitzarach b'dikachrim, and then he's going to have to be bodeg. Tanya Kavase, the Rav, we have a price that supports Rav. Harotza lechol chametz achar b'dika. Ketzad yasa, what should a person do when he intends to continue eating after his bedika? Mashem shayyan echad b'tzinish lo tovel chulda v'titol b'fanenu. That's what we're afraid of. Because if we see the chulda coming into the house with chametz, then yitzarach bedika achrav, that creates a vadai. And the possibility that the chulda might eat up the chametz is only a sofek. And we apply the principle of eight sofek most of the vadai. Now Rav Osher Omar, is that what it says in your Gemara?
No.
Okay. Doesn't say Rav Osher leader Omar?
No,
it doesn't say. Okay, this is Rav Osher leader's answer. Rav Mari Omar, Rav Mari says the following. Gzeira Sheme Yaniach Eser V'yimsa Teisha. What we're worried about in the Mishnah is that he knows exactly how many pieces of chametz he has, and he saves it for tomorrow. You know, he's got X number of pieces of bread which he's going to eat for his whole family for breakfast, and then instead of finding all 10, lo and behold, he finds 9. What happened to that 10th piece? That's the real nightmare of Bedikas Chametz. You know, you put out 10 pieces of bread for the Bedika, and then you only find 9. This happens almost annually in our house. So therefore, I don't know if this whole minig about the 10 pieces is such a good one. Anyway, he says that in such a case, it's as if we know that the Chulda took the 10th piece, because where did the 10th piece disappear? And therefore we have a vada situation where there's chametz in the house and we need a repeat bedika, and that's going to be it. Tosas Dibra Maskel Bishlosha Sarlo Mashaire says the following. This is in order to explain Abaye, that in our Mishnah we're talking about a bedika on the 13th, which is, by the way, very strange that our Mishnah is talking about a bedika on the 13th. But Pirish Pam She'ena Mishayeres. It doesn't mean that she definitely is going to eat up the chametz, because again, we don't want to undermine everything that we've been saying on Daf Tes Amud Aleph. Lahachi Hecha Delo Chazina Lo Chayshinon Kevin Dafilu Gora Pam Eina Mishayeres. In other words, we don't know that the chulda got a hold of the chametz. We also have a very significant, shall we say, statistical probability that the chulda would have eaten up the chametz. And therefore, ena mishayeres. In other words, sometimes it will eat up all the chametz rather than leave over some chametz. Aval hecha dechazinon, if we actually see the chametz in the mouth of the chulda going into the house, then chayshina, we have to worry about the possibility that the chulda will perhaps save some of the chametz. Kemenship pa'omim mishayeres. However, be yudalid, here's the chiddush of Abaye, if the bedika was done in yudalid, then li'ola mishayeres, because of the the dearth of chametz, you can bet your bottom dollar that the chulda will leave its chametz around rather than completely consume the chametz, and therefore gabi basar. And therefore, even if we don't see in front of our eyes that the chulda took the chametz, but since we know that on the tzad that it did took the chametz, we don't have another tzad lekula and say that it was lo mishayre, because here we assume that li'ola mishayeres. Those are the key two words in Tosfos, li'ola mishayeres. We should underline those words. Is therefore, we're left with one suffix, and therefore we need another b'dikah. In the case of Maduras Akum that we learned, where even if we didn't see the chul to take away the nefel, we olam lo mishayeres. We always assume that once the chul gets hold of the nefel, it will definitely consume the nechal. V'yasi shap Rabbi Reb Zera, and then Rabbi could work out with Reb Zera. Reb Zera on Omid Aleph made the distinction between basar and the chametz. And now, Rav Osai, we start a new sugya. Well, I'm not sure it's a new sugya, because according to Rashi, at least, it's a hemshech, it's a continuation of the old sugya about the chulda taking the chametz into the house and whether we need another bedika. So in that sense, we're still on the same radar screen. Tosis is going to learn that this is a totally separate sugya. Tosis, just by way of introduction, this very long Tosis, Hainu, he's going to assume that what we're about to embark upon is a case where we find a piece of pastry, I'll call it, if that's a good word, and we're not sure whether it's matzah or it's chametz. Rashi, on the other hand, is learning this whole sugya. We're talking about a chulda, that the chulda takes a piece of pastry. We're not sure what she has in her mouth. Is it a piece of chametz, a piece of matzah? And therefore, we don't know if we need another bedika. So let's learn the sugya first according to Rashi. Teisha tziburim shel matzah v'echad shel chametz. We know that the matzah was put in one particular pile, and we know that the chametz was put in a different pile. Now, initially, we knew which was chametz and which was matzah. However, that's only because of the location. You follow what I mean? Let's say all the chametz was put here, all the matzah was put here. But now, one of the pieces, and we don't know whether it's from the chametz or from the matzah, gets separated from these piles. Now, how did that happen? So the Gemara says, Asa Akbar Vishakal. So this little rodent came along and took from one of the piles, and then it went into the house, which, again, according to Rashi, went into the house, which was already checked. Do we have to worry about the fact that the piece that it took was, in fact, chametz, and therefore he has to do a repeat bedika? Now, Rav Osai, statistically, what are the chances that this is chametz?
1/10.
Right, only 10%. And yet, right? Lo yadinini matzah shakel chametz shakel. And yet, hainu teisha chanuyos. This case, and the question of whether we need another bedika, is going to be dependent on a very famous issue about finding a piece of meat in a place where, let's say, out in the open, in a place where there are 9 butcher shops that are selling kosher meat and one that's selling non-kosher meat. And we find a piece of meat. So again, when I find a piece of meat and there are 9 kosher butchers and one trefa butcher, what are the chances, what are the probabilities that this is kosher? 90%, right? But it's not so simple. Piresh, if we find a piece of meat that was removed from one of these 10 stores, and we don't know which of the 10 stores, is then we can apply the principle of Rov, and we can assume, since there are 9 out of 10 butcher shops that are selling kosher meat, that this piece of meat is kosher. However, as we'll soon see, that's only in the case of Pirish, but not in a case where he went into one of the stores and he doesn't know which store he went into. That's going to be called Kavur Kibetz Ametz. Again, we'll get to that in just a minute. But now we're going to say, Asa Akbar V'Shakal Hainu Seifa. If one of the pieces of chametz or matzah, meaning, we'll call it again, I'll use the word pastry if I could. You know, if you give me a better word, I'll be very happy, but I'm going to use the word pastry, meaning unidentified. So we can't see and look and know whether it's chametz or matzah. It's not readily apparent. Well, there's that piece of meat. It's sitting there in front of these 10 piles. That's called pirish. Pirish means we find it separated from the 10 piles. And now we're asking, well, which pile did it come out of? The asa akbar v'shakal. Now this rodent came along and took that piece, that unidentified piece, and it entered into the house. Again, this is all going to Rashi. Hainu seifa. That's going to be the seifa, which is called rov. Rov means that we can apply the statistical probability theory, and since 9 out of 10 of these piles were matzah, we can assume that the one piece that the achbar took into the house was matzah. Why? Because that's called rov. The fancy term for it is called kol de parish, anything that got separated, miruba parish, it came from the rov. This not. Now, this is a little bit of a problem, this Girsa, because there is no such Mishnah. So the word disnan, which usually means a Mishnah, has to be taken out. And instead, we should read it as disanya. It's a brisa. The brisa wants to know, what do we do with a piece of meat, and it's unidentified as to whether it was shechted meat, or it's nevela, the animal died without shechita, and therefore it's asur. And in general, the rules are that if you have a 50-50 suffix, then since we're dealing with the Doraisa, we don't want a chas v'shalom eat nevela, therefore we say suffix Doraisa l'chumra. However, if there's rov, rov means majority rules, and we can be matir based on rov. However, the tan of this brice that we're learning is mechadish and new chiddush, that it all depends upon what kind of a situation it was. We're not always permitted to apply the principle of rov. The rule of rov is very restricted. And how is it restricted? So it all depends upon what we call the leidas ha-safek. Right? I'm going to write that on the board because that's the key concept here in this sugya. Leidas ha-safek. What is the safek? Where did it originate from? Did it originate from Parush, meaning when we found a piece of meat outside in front of these stores? Or did it originate in what's called Kavua? Kavua means in a place that is permanently located, permanently situated. We'll explain as we go along. So the Brisa says the following. You found a piece of meat and it's unidentified. You've got 9 kosher butcher shops and one non-kosher butcher shop. So what are you looking at? Are you looking at kosher meat or non-kosher meat? So the answer is, it all depends upon the leidas ha-safek. If the leidas ha-safek was b'makom kvius, meaning I don't know which store I went into to buy the meat, is then we apply the principle of kol kavua kemechza al mechza dami. That anything that's kavua, that's set, we see it as 50-50. It doesn't matter what the numbers really are. We're always going to determine that it's a suffix of mechza al mechza 50-50. And to give you just a flavor of this, it's based on a pasuk in Dvarim Perek Yutes. And there the Torah says, I think it's at the end of Parsha Shoftim. No, it's earlier than that. It's, can anyone open up to a Chumash? Do we have a Chumash here? I saw a Chumash here. Do me a favor, Ash, if you don't mind. Dvarim Perek Yutes. Pasuk Yud Aleph, 19:11. It should say, V'arev lo v'kam alav. I mean, that's only part of the pasuk, but that's the part that's relevant to us.
Yutes Yud Aleph, you said?
Yeah. Do you have such a thing? Just that part. V'arev lo v'kam alav, correct? That's all we have to do. And where is it? In what parasha?
Shoftim.
Oh, it is in Shoftim. Okay, I thought Shoftim starts a little late. Oh, here's the case. Rabbi said, listen to this. It's a murder case. Okay? Now, when we say a murder case, what we mean is a Jew was murdered. And he was murdered by a Jew. So in that murder case, we put the murderer, obviously, to death. That's a capital crime. However, there's a little bit of confusion here about whether or not the action was an action of murder. Now, that sounds funny. I just told you somebody was murdered, so obviously the action was an action of murder. Well, if you look at the stone in flight that's about to kill somebody, that's murder. But look at the person who threw the stone. That's not necessarily an act of murder. What's the case? The case is that there are 9 Jews. And 9, let's say we talk about the potential victims, if you follow what I mean. And there's one Canaan, there's one non-Jew. Now, a Jew comes along, and he throws a very heavy stone into this group. And he kills a Jew. But when he threw the stone, did we know that that stone was going to hit a Jew? If they were all, you know, located in the same spot? Well, the answer is no, because there's one Kanani there. Now, what is the statistical probability that it'll hit the Kanani?
10%.
Only 10%. As a matter of fact, we know that he killed a Jew. I mean, unfortunately, the body is there. And can we put the thrower to death? And the answer is no. Why not? Because it's considered kemechts al mechtsin. Wait a minute, what do you mean kemechts al mechtsin? There's only one Kanani there. There are 9 Jews. That's 90 to 10. That's not 50 to 50. But this is called Kavua. What does Kavua mean? That we don't know, as the stone is leaving his hand, where the stone is going to land. So the stone is hitting into a Makom Kavua. And the numbers that make up the Makom Kavua are totally irrelevant. As long as, you know, when I say the numbers, I mean there's got to be one, you know, one counter, if you follow me. David?
In the case of the meat, we have a suspect whether it's kosher or not. Here we know a Jew was killed.
But we have to determine whether or not the murderer is guilty of murder. Now, what do I mean is guilty of murder? So that phrase, guilty of murder, really breaks down into 2 different elements.
So it's
number one, we have to look at the final outcome. You know, did he murder a Jew? And the answer is yes. There's no question about that. But number two, we have to ask whether or not he was guilty of perpetrating a maisa ritzicha, which means that the halacha defines that action when he throws the rock as an act of murder. So we're watching the stone as it leaves his hand, you know, and he propels it. At that moment in time, where is the stone going to hit? So if you tell me, well, I have a 90% probability that's going to hit a Jew, that's an act of murder. Because the Torah says we determine every action based on Rome. But if we apply the principle of Kavua, which means that all the people here lined up are stationary in their place, each one respectfully in their place, then we don't count the numbers here, how many Jews are there, how many non-Jews there are, but rather we view it all as 50-50, 50% Jewish and 50% non-Jewish.
There's 2 outcomes. One outcome is you killed a Jew, or one outcome is you killed a Canaan. So that's how they're looking at it. There's 2 possible outcomes.
Right. And from the perspective of the outcome, I guess you could say it's like 50-50. Why? Because there are only two outcomes. Either he's going to kill, again, we know he killed the Jew, but as far as the Maaser Ritzicha is concerned, the Maaser Ritzicha lends itself to two different possibilities. And that's called Kemechtza al Mechtza. Now, Rabbi Osei, what would be if one of the ten jumped out and then he threw the stone at that one of the ten that jumped out and he killed the Jew? What would you say about that act of thrusting, of throwing the, projecting the...
That's murder.
That's murder. Because there, we apply the principle of kol deparish meruba parish. Because the very moment that one person, one human being out of the ten, steps out, the halacha already points to him and says he's considered a Jew. Again, we'll have to find out if he was a Jew, but I'm saying, as far as Rov is concerned, he has the status of a Jew, and therefore if you aim to kill him, that's an act of Ritzicha. So again, in both of the two cases, a stone was thrown by a Jew was killed, but the difference is going to be that in the first case, nobody jumped out of the Makom Kvirs, the place where everyone was stationary, and therefore we apply the principle of Kemechtz al Mechtzadam. Once one of them jumps out, we assume kol deparsh meruba parsh, that that person came from the majority. It means he belonged to that group, which was the 90% all, which was Jewish.
If this fellow was the Kanadi, though, and if he jumped out, would we assume he's like the Rove? Now he's like, he's a Jew, so when he was killed, it's like, it's still murder, because...
No. No, again, every case that we're dealing with, we have the body. You know, we can't put someone to death without having the body. The body itself is a Jewish body. That we know. The question is, are you guilty of Ritzicha? And here the halacha gets very abstract, and the halacha says it depends. If the suffix is nolad b'makom kvius, in other words, already at the time that the stone is in flight, we don't know, as Steve says very well, what the outcome is going to be, because there's no way that right now we can determine whether it's going to hit a Jew or non-Jew. Now, you and I would have said, well, it's a 90% all chance that it's going to hit a Jew, but that's not Rove. Why? Because what's mafkia, what removes Rove here? Kvius. And that's based on this pasuk of a kala for arivlo, which means that the Torah is going out of its way to say in this pasuk in Parashat Shoftim that the murder weapon, the in this case the vehicle, the stone, is directed towards, it's got to be directed towards a Jew. And it's not directed towards the Jew because we have a makom kvius. Now, what does this all have to do with a piece of meat? Oh, so the answer is the following. 9 out of 10 are selling kosher meat. V'achas mocheres basar nevela, v'lokach me'achas me'en, v'eini yodeh me'ezem en lokach. So where's the suffix nolad, my friends? If he doesn't remember which store he went into. In the stores itself. The stores are kavua. So if I break down the stores into categories, there are only two categories. And that's called kimechtz al mechtza, and therefore speko asur. He has to assume the possibility, and it's called a 50% possibility in this case, of his going into a non-kosher butcher shop, and therefore the meat that he's holding is non-kosher. That's called kimechtz al mechtza, dummy, all because it's b'makom kvius, he doesn't remember which store he went into. So however, says the Bryson in the Sefer, if let's say a man didn't go into any of the stores, he simply was walking around in front of the stores and he finds a piece of meat in front of the store, is halach achar rov, then we apply the principle of kol deparish meruba parish, and since 9 out of 10 in this case, 9 out of 10 butcher stores, are selling what? Basar shkuta kosher meat, he can assume that the meat that he found is kosher. Now, again, the Bryce gives the case of 9 versus 1. It wouldn't make any difference if it was 6 versus 4. There are 6 kosher butcher shops and 4 non-kosher butcher shops, but called a parish, meruba parish. The big question here is, what about the volume of meat in each store? You know, you could have 2 butcher stores, one of them sells, a pittance, sells a very limited amount of meat, It's a smaller store. The other store is a massive store, you know, with a tremendous volume of meat. Is that relevant? But let's assume for our purposes, just to get through this sugya, at least on the simple level, that each store more or less deals with a similar volume of meat, and therefore everything depends upon where the suffix was nolad. If the suffix was a result of, I don't know which store I went into, so the suffix goes back to the stores, then we see these two categories of stores as kemechts al mechtsadami, and therefore kol kavua is asur. But if on the other hand he finds a piece of meat, and then the suffix is nolad biparish, meaning in the meat that's floating around here, that was removed from the makom kviyas, and we want to know where it came out of, then we're going to say kol deparish meruba parish. Now, let's apply this to the case of bedikas chametz. So a man did his bedika, and now he sees a chulda going back into his house with an unidentified flying object, meaning we don't know what he's carrying in his mouth. Says the Gemara, it all depends. If the chulda, we saw the chulda going into one of these piles, we don't know which pile it went into, so the suffix was already nolad b'makom kviyus, even before the chulda got into my house, just when it was choosing from amongst these different piles, and that's kemechts al mechtsadami, the chulda sees in front of it two different categories of piles. If on the other hand, even before the chulda got there, one of the pieces of pastry separated from these 10 piles, and there it is right there in the middle. Right in the middle meaning, you know, if you draw a semicircle, right there in the middle here. So we don't know which of the piles it came out of. Then I can apply the principle of what?
Rov.
Called the parsh, meruba parsh. So now when I see the chulda carrying this piece of paint, this underdive, I know it's what, or at least the Torah says I can assume it's matzah. Why? Because there are 9 out of 10 piles of matzah. Again, going over it one more time, but if I see the chulda going into piles, and I'm not sure which pile it went into, that's already called the kol kavua kemechts al mechtsadami, and we don't apply the principle of rov. This is the way Rashi learns our sugya. Let's see the Rashi inside. The Asa Akbar Veshakal. Can you find such a Rashi? It's parallel to Tosti Maskal Hainu. He says that the rodent came along, Veshakal, and it took a piece of pastry, an unidentified. Venichnas Labayis Lefanenu, and with it, in its mouth, it went into the house. Velo yadina, but we don't know. Chametz shakal. What did it grab onto? Was it chametz, or was it matzah? The came in the chazinon, and since we saw it, and we don't know what the nature of this piece of pastry is, tzrichin anu livdok. We have to do another bdika. O dilma, or shall we say matzah shakal? The achbar took a piece of matzah, and if I don't have to do another bdika, obviously. And the answer is Hainu Teisha Chanuyos, meaning the distinction between Kol Kavua Kemechts Al Mechtsadami and Kol Deparish Meruba Parish will apply now to the case of this unidentified piece of pastry, whether we need a bedika, a second bedika to replace the first bedika. If it was a case of Piresh, where one of the pieces of pastry was separated from all the other piles, then we're going to assume kol deparish meruba parish, and the achbar has a piece of matzah in its mouth. If, on the other hand, we're dealing with a case of shakal, which means that we saw the chula going into the piles and taking from one of the piles, it's not that we saw a piece of pastry on it that came out of the piles, but now the chula went into the piles, and we don't know which pile it went into, that's called kol kavua kemechtsa al mechtsadam. Says Tosfos, yeah. I don't know. Good question. I don't know why all of a sudden.
Is it because the achbar doesn't have cheshbonos and the chulda does?
I don't think so. I think a chulda and an achbar are pretty much the same in this context, but I don't know. Says Tosfos, Hainu Teisha Chanuyos. Lefi ma shepirsh hakudshes leinyan bedika lo nehira leri. The Ri cannot accept that if we saw the chulda going into one of the piles, and if we don't know which pile it went into, we have to apply the principle of kol kavua kemechtz al mechtzadomi. And then when the chulda goes in to the bias, I have to do another bedika. Tosfos says that's not true. Now, to appreciate this Tosfos, we just have to remind ourselves of Tosfos on Daf Tesam and Aleph, Dibra Maskel Kidei. And when I say Kidei, I mean the first Kidei. And Tosfos there had quoted the Ri, and he says, Omer Ri, right before it gets wide, why the lines get wide, he says, Masnisen Ayri Bishalo Bitlo. Davi vade da'oraisa. When we see the chulda going into the house with chametz, are we dealing with a da'oraisa or a drabanan? So the Ri says that he didn't do bittel. And if he didn't do bittel, we have the two lavim da'oraisa bal yirah bal yimatzeh to deal with, and therefore we're dealing with the da'oraisa. Now Rashi, if you recall, was of the opinion that we're talking about a case where he already did bittel. And if he already did bittel, then we reduce it down to a drabanan. So the Ri now is going to get very upset. Lo nehira le Ri, we're back in Tosfos Dibra Maskel Hainu on Tesamid Beis. De hechi maisi raya mitesha chanus tavi sofek do raisa aslinu chuvah hocha sofek drabanan hu kidam rita besomuch. According to Rashi, we're talking about a case where where he fulfilled his full obligation, which is called Abodik Tzarek Sheh Yevatel. And then we reduce the Chiyuv Bdika from a Doraisa down to a Drabanan. If it's a Drabanan, says Tosfos, we should apply the principle of Sofik Drabanan Lakula. Meaning, I don't know the nature of this piece of meat, piece of pastry that the Achbar is carrying as it went into my house. 50-50. Why? Because the Mokh Sofik was no Mokh Kfiyas, called Kavul Kamech Tzal Mechzadomi, but we have a principle of Sofik to Rabbanu Lekula. And therefore, says the Ri, Miu Yeshlomar, you could answer for Rashi, the Iri, the case that we're dealing with, is Kigon Shalom Bitel. And if it's Shalom Bitel, then if we don't know whether or not Chametz is being taken into the house, we have to be Machmir Midin Sofik Doraisa Lekula, because it was never a Bitel. And now Bidika and so forth becomes Doraisa. And therefore, he's got to do a bedikah. But the Ri is not satisfied with that, because when the Ri says that Hocha Mairi Kigon Shalom Bitel, that would contradict the Ri's opinion here on Daf Tesam and Aleph, where he says Omer Ri Demastisen Ayri Bishalom. Oh, one second. Let's just think. Again, the Ri on Daf Tesam and Beis says that we're talking about a case. Shalom Bitlo. And now he says, so the Ri is really Lishitaso, meaning he's being very consistent. Since in the case of the Chulda on Amud Aleph, where he saw the Chulda going in with the Chametz, we said the Ri says, Ayri Delo Bitlo. And that's why the Gemara is dealing with Safik Motzim and Devade Doraisa. Here the Ri also, in the case of Hainu Teisha Chanuyos, says that the only way out, the only way we can justify the Gemara's conclusion that we apply the principle of Kol Kavua Kemechtz Al Mechzadomi, and therefore we require him to do another Bedika, is going to have to be a case where he was not Mevatel Chametz, and therefore we have a Sofik D'Oraisa. If we don't know whether he's carrying Chametz or Matzah, we have to require it. But he's not happy with that either. The Od Kosha, the Gabi Teisha Chanuyos, Leka Chezkas Heter, Aval Hocha Ukma Chezkas Heter Dabe Barak Mayri. He says that if the sugya here is dealing with the question of a repeat performance of bedika, once the first bedika was initiated, then we have a new chazaka, and that chazaka tells me that there's no chametz in the house. That has nothing to do with Teisha Chanuyos. In Teisha Chanuyos, I'm looking at a piece of meat, and nothing can help me determine whether this meat came from the kosher butcher shops or the non-kosher butcher shops. I don't have any original premise, which is called a chazaka. Now, if there's a cheskas heter, which means I have an original premise, because at one point in time it was mutter. Now I want to know whether something came along to aser it. Then we say uki aches kosher. We say the chazaka wins out. We're not going to take a suffix and undermine a chazaka. Therefore, Tosus the Rish says, I don't understand the equation of the Gemara. Why do we say, Kol kavua kemechtzal mechtzotomi l'chumri, you can't eat this piece of meat if you don't remember which store you went into? That's because there's no chazaka. But in a case where the chulda, or the akbar, comes and goes into the house was already baduk. If the house was already baduk, it has a cheskes heter, which tells me that if you have any doubt as to whether or not chometz came in, you can always assume that chometz did not come in. Therefore, says the Ri, Venera le Ri, to le Inyan. Let me just read you. Old Kosh Gavi Teisha Chanuyis Leka Cheskes Heter, Aval Hocha Ukme Acheskes Boduk, to have a Boduk Mairi, to Ilav Hoki Pshita, right? It must be a case that it was Boduk.
It was Boduk?
Yeah, again, because originally the Ri wanted to suggest that maybe we're talking about a case, the low Boduk. Oh, no, I'm sorry. No, originally the Ri said it was talking about a case of low bittul. That the Ri is willing to maintain. But you can't tell me that the house is not bodu, because the house is not bodu, it has to do with bedika. So this whole discussion about the achbar and so forth is totally hypothetical. He has to do bedika because he didn't do bedika yet. It must be a case we already did bedika, and the issue is whether he needs a repeat bedika. No, if he already did bedika, he has a cheskes bodu, which tells me that if you have any doubts as to whether or not chometz went in, you always assume, you maintain that original chazaka that there was no chometz going in. So if we have kol kavua kemechtzal mechtzadomi, we're not going to assume that chometz went in. Therefore, v'nira l'ri, d'le inyan, shehevi achbar l'bayis, v'nimtza, Kaboy. The suffix in the Gemara is where we have the piece of pastry in front of us. Now, if we have the piece of pastry in front of us that the African took in, we just simply removed it from its mouth, then what's the issue? Says Tosfos, Ishari l'achilo ilav. Now again, you and I might find it repulsive to eat a piece of pastry that came from the mouth of an Achbar, especially on Pesach. But nevertheless, the halacha has to answer this question. You know, maybe the achbar didn't make it so disgusting, or you can cut off the adult layer.
It was in a wrapper.
Right, it was in a wrapper or something, or maybe we're talking about an ani shabbat niyam. So the question is, are you allowed to eat this piece? It's an unidentified pastry. So chances are that it came from the nine piles of matzah. But the problem is, we saw the achbar go into one of these piles, and that creates a suffix v'makom kvius to apply the principle of kol kavua kemetzal mefzadom. So we can't eat it. And you're going to tell me, well, suffix d'rabbana l'kula, we're not talking about a suffix d'rabbana here. We're talking about a real bona fide suffix d'oraisa. If you eat it and it turns out to be a piece that came from that one pile of chametz, you violate an isa karis. If, on the other hand, you saw one piece of pastry coming out of this whole mixture, and then the achbar took it away, that's called the parish meruba parish, and you're allowed to eat that piece of pastry, and you're allowed to assume that it's matzah. I hope you're not using it for matzah's mitzvah, but anyway. V'nira l'ri, d'le'inya shehevi achbar l'bayis, v'nitza kaboy, that's how it's suffering. Ishari l'chili lav, v'yim tomar ki osa achbar v'shokal, Mehani tzibur da mai choshev le kavua maishna nimtza b'fi achbar b'nimtza b'yad nochri. What happens if the guy, let's say you have a guy working for you, and he has a piece of meat in his hand, and that's called basar shenis ali min ha'ayin, meaning, let's say, you know, what we do is we take our kosher meat and we double wrap it, or whatever we do, that's called simon. But let's say you have a piece of meat without a simon on it. You don't know whether it's kosher or non-kosher. And the guy is holding on to this meat. So in such a case, it depends on rov. If most of the meat that's available in this house from which he took it is kosher meat, then you're allowed to eat that piece of meat. So the question is, wait a minute. The guy is holding on to the meat. That should be called kavua kemechtzal mechtzadomi. Just like if you saw the achbar holding on to a piece of pastry, unidentified, then you can apply the principle called kavua kemechtzal mechtzadomi. And why not say it's exactly like the case of the meat that's been, that's being held by the guy, biyad anochri. So the Ri says, Hocha Mayri Kishra Inu Shalokach Mina Kavua Shenolat Asofik B'makum Kvius Aval Ilo Ra'inu Havi Kepirish. So again, if we saw the guy going into the various piles, you know, there was a refrigerator that had kosher meat in it, and there was a refrigerator that had non-kosher meat in it. Let's say there were 9 refrigerators in this massive industrial kitchen, and they were all contained kosher meat. Then you had one fridge that had non-kosher meat. If you saw the guy going into a fridge, you're not sure which fridge he went to, that would be called kavua kemetz al metzadomin. But if on the other hand, all you know is the guy's holding on to the piece of meat, where did he get it from? Then we apply the principle called the parish meruba parish. We're going to do the exact same thing in the case of the achbar with the chametz. We're going to say if the achbar went in and took from one of the piles, we don't know which pile it went into, called the parish. I'm sorry, called kavua kemetz al metzadomin. If on the other hand, the achbar took one particular piece that was already parish, it was already separated from the piles, then we're going to apply the principle called the parish meruba parish. So here's the machlokas now between Rashi and the Ri. This is an in-family fight. According to Rashi, we're talking about bedika. We did a bedika, now we see the achbar going into the house with some unidentified piece of pastry, so we say the following, that if there's a safek, we don't know because it's called kavua kemetz al metzadomin. We saw the creature going into the piles. We don't know which pile it went into. Then we're going to require a second bedika when the animal goes into the house. Tosus objects and he says that can't be because we have a principle called safek d'rabbanan l'kula. If he already made his bittul, then we reduce it down to a level of a d'rabbanan. And in d'rabbanan we say safek d'rabbanan l'kula. Apparently Rashi holds that we're talking about a case where he didn't do bittul. Ah, no. Rashi holds that in general he didn't do bittul. No, Rashi holds in general that he did bittul. Right? He did bittul. Sorry. Rashi holds in general that he did bittul. If he did bittul, then I think it's only drabbana. So Tosfos objects, so something drabbana lakula, you don't know. The answer is that as we discuss the great length, Rashi holds that he is. What?
There's a special chiyuv for the bedika.
Exactly. That the entire enterprise of bedika was established because of safek. That the whole drabbana was enacted to get from a safek to a vade, to make sure without any doubt that the chametz is out of the house. And that's why the chachamim instituted bedika. So as long as you have a 50-50 safek, because you saw the achbar going into one of the piles, you don't know which pile, then it went into the house, then we're going to apply the principle of safek chayav b'bedika, even if he already did his bittul.
Right.
Tosus, on the other hand, holds that bedika should be analyzed from the universal perspective of all the rabbanans if he already did bittul. So Tosus offers two possibilities. One possibility is to say that our sug is without bittul, and if it's without bittul, we have a serious doraisa b'ayirah b'ayimotze. The other possibility, says Tosus, which seems to be his final conclusion, is that our sugya is talking about whether we can eat this piece of pastry.
Yeah.
We rip it out of the mouth of the achbar, and we want to know what is it. Is it matzah or is it chametz? And the answer is, if you get a 50-50 safek here, because kol kavur kemetz al metzah, then it's safek d'oraisa chum, you don't want to eat that piece of chametz, or possible chametz. If on the other hand, we can apply the principle called the parish meruba parish, why? Because already one piece had separated itself from the makom kvius. So the latest asofik was the makom de parish. Then we apply the principle called the parish. We have nine piles of matzah. And therefore we can assume that this piece is matzah. No, are you going to eat that matzah? Well, you can tell me, Rabbi, I'm very nervous. I don't want to eat the matzah because there's a 10% chance that it's chametz. I don't want to get involved in this. And then I'm going to ask you, what about the case where you find a piece of meat and you don't know, there's at least a 10% chance that meat might be trafe for meat. And I'm going to tell you, we'll call the parish meruba parish. It came from the 9 and out of the 10, and it's kosher. So you're going to say, Rabbi, don't force me to eat this meat because there's a 10% chance it's trafe for meat. You know, we go from a hadrin to a hadrin, you want to get my dots, you want to get all the best hachshavim in the world. Right? You want satra shtita. So you're not going to eat something that there's a 10% chance that it's treif. So I'm going to tell you, I want you to be the halachic man. The ish halacha. The ish halacha follows the halacha. And you're not going to throw out a good piece of meat or a good piece of pastry if there's 90% chance that the Torah says rely on rov because it's called a parish. Go ahead and eat the meat. And you don't worry about your portion in the next world. Now this, again, we're going to have to end now, but this touches on a whole different issue about how Rov operates. So I'll give you the question, and maybe we'll pick this up tomorrow. Let's say you have three pieces of meat. One of them is treif. Okay? So I take one of them, and I say it came from the Rov. Well, two out of three are kosher, I can eat that one. Okay, now how many pieces of meat are left now?
Two.
Okay, now you just told me I ate the kosher one, right? So what's going on now?
Seems like
it would seem up. Like there's 50% chance that there's a treif piece of meat. I take the second one out, right? And I eat that one. Then I want to get to the third one. So the Rosh says you can eat even the third one. Wait a minute, if I eat all three, then I know for sure that one is treif. So the Rosh says there's a halacha called bittul. And bittul means iser nefach lios heter. That the Torah says with this power of Rov that the Iser is transformed into head. So believe that, we'll see if we can talk about that talk. Okay, then everyone should have a great
explain to me the difference between Reuben's Hashkafa and Reuben.